and welcome to another episode of Strewn Along the Path, another Netflix Q episode. It's been a while since I've actually recorded one of these. I ran through most of the ones I had already recorded, so it's kind of good to see something fresh. Of course, I have a new backlog that I guess I can pick and choose from, or I can just go through in order, regardless of what it's about. This episode is kind of a grab bag of things that are related. If you heard from the opening, you may have guessed this is all train related. So this list could go on pretty long, but I picked things that I kind of watched. Two of them I think I watched back to back, not on purpose. It just kind of happened that way. The first one on the list is The Commuter, starring Liam Neeson. And, you know, you probably know Liam Neeson, of course, from Star Wars Episode One, where he was Qui-Gon Jinn. You may know him from, you know, his earlier films like Rob Roy or The Grey. You may know him as Ra's al Ghul from Batman Begins. You may even know him as Aslan from the Narnia movies. My kids definitely know his voice from that. But he's also been known in the last decade for his string of action movies as an older actor. I don't even know how old he is, but as an older actor, he's kind of got a resurgence of his career as an action hero. You know, it started with Taken, right, where his daughter was taken and he had to go kill everybody and get his daughter back. And that had the famous line where he was talking to the guy on the phone where, "I have a specific set of skills, and if you don't give me my daughter, I will kill you." And he did. He used those specific set of skills to get his daughter back. And then he did it in the second Taken movie to get his wife back. And then he did it in the third Taken movie. I can't remember what happened in the third movie. Maybe I'll have to do a Taken all-in-one episode here. And then he starred in some other movies like, was Nonstop was the one with him on an airplane. There was another one called Unknown, which I may have watched, but I don't remember it. So I might have to watch it again. And then the latest one, well, at least I think his latest one action hero wise was The Commuter, where he's on a commuter train and he gets forced into action. So in this movie, he's an ex-cop. He's been working as he got out of the service to spend more time with his family. He's been commuting for work every day. He's an insurance agent and sells insurance and handles people's cases and things like that. He's been doing that for 10 years. And it's him and his wife and his son. And his son's getting ready to go to college, and so they're looking at what it's going to take to send him to college money-wise. I can relate to that. And then he gets fired. Just out of the blue, he's fired. And what's he going to do? I think in the movie he said he was, you know, like 55 years old or almost 60 years old or something like that. And so, you know, who's going to hire him at that age? What's he going to do? All that kind of stuff. And so he's in a bad spot. But again, for 10 years, he's been commuting on this train into the city for his job. And now he's headed back home. He's going to have to tell his wife that he got fired. And what are they going to do? How are they going to make ends meet? How are they going to send their child to college? I have some thoughts on that. Have him pay his own way to college. Nobody paid my way to college other than, you know, offering me a place to live and free food and giving me a job where I could earn money. I may have received some cash from my parents, but it was never like, "Hey, we're going to pay for your tuition for a year," or "we're going to," and I didn't live on campus. I lived at home and I went to college and paid the tuition and bought the books myself. But I had earned money. I had jobs, and I continued to work throughout college and earn money. And so that's how I got through college. So I don't know why people think, "Oh, I'm a as a parent, I have to pay for my child's entire college. It's kind of crazy that way. Not that we can't help. Not that we can't do a little bit to help them out. If they don't do anything and just go to school and or just get student loans and use a bunch of debt, well, that's not good either. So I don't know. I just think if you want to go to college, you have to earn it. You have to work. You have to go for it. You can get help from your parents. You get help from your family and get scholarships and all that kind of thing. But otherwise, work for it. Well, that's my soapbox for that. Maybe because I have a daughter that's going to college. Or I think she's going to college. She was going to go to a college, and then she changed her mind, and now she's looking at another college. It's kind of back and forth a little bit, but she half expected us to pay for everything. And we said, you know, you have to start making money. You have to get a full-time job until you're going to go to school and start earning money. We'll help you out, and you can live here if you're going local. But anyway, that's getting way off the subject. Sorry about that. We were talking about the commuter. And so anyway, so here's Liam Neeson. So he's sitting there, he's reading his book. Oh, that's another cool thing, I guess. You know, he's been reading the same books as his son. You know, his son's been going to school and he had to read books for class. Well, his dad would read it with him. Or maybe, I think that's what was going on. And they would talk about the book together kind of thing. I don't think it was just a, hey, let's read this book together. I think it was his school assignments and stuff like that. So that was kind of cool. So he's just sitting there reading his book, and this lady comes by and sits across from him. And she starts up a kind of a pleasant conversation. And soon she starts talking about, she's a psychologist, or that, I think that's what she was. Anyway, she's talking about that and how she learns to know people and finds out what makes them tick and what they're all about. And so she says, you know, he's kind of interested. He kind of puts down his book to be pleasant. And then she says, let me pose to you a hypothetical question. I'll probably won't get this perfectly right. But she says, what if, and I know this phrase isn't correct, but I have to use it because it's Liam Neeson. But she says, you know, what if you had a specific set of skills and you were asked to use those skills to find someone on this train that doesn't belong? And by finding that person, you would affect that person's life in a significant way, but you wouldn't know why, you wouldn't know what, you wouldn't know how, but you know that it would affect them. Would you do it? And he just, you know, kind of taking it as it was posed as a hypothetical question and just kind of, well, what's in it for me kind of thing. And she goes, oh, $100,000. He's like, wow. And then she starts going into more specifics about kind of what would be required and how much money he would get up front and how much money, you know, once he finished his task that he would get money. And then he starts to realize, he's like, I thought you said this was a hypothetical question. Are you serious? And then she just said, on this train in the bathroom is $25,000. If you take that $25,000, that means you've accepted the assignment. And then she gets up and leaves at the next stop. And he's like, who is this? What's going on? Kind of thing. This lady is full of it. But then his curiosity gets the better of him, and he goes and he checks the bathroom. And it's not obvious, but he has to look around for it and find it in the bathroom where it's hidden. But he does find an envelope with cash in it. I don't think he counts it, but it's obviously a lot of money. It's probably the $25,000. And he needs the money, right? I mean, I just talked about how he got fired from his job and he needs all this money for this and that. And so it's pretty tempting. He takes the money, comes out, the train stops at the next station or whatever, and this young person gets on and starts to talk to him. Did you do it? Did you accept the job? And I think he's like, whoa, who are you? Wait a minute. And it's actually Shuri from Black Panther who does. I didn't recognize her when I first saw the movie, but I watched it again last year after having seen Black Panther. And I'm like, hey, I know who that girl is. But anyway, so, and he's like, what? And she gives him a phone. he talks to, and then the lady calls him on the phone. He talks to the lady, the original lady that he talked to. And she's like, hey, you've accepted. This is on you. You took the money. You have to do this. Blah, blah, blah. And then he starts really getting suspicious, really gets worried about it, and starts looking for ways to kind of get out of it. He doesn't really do anything about it, if I remember this correctly. And then she calls him back again and says, hey, I have your family. I'm watching your family. We can take them. We can do whatever we need to do. It's like, holy crap. And so he borrows somebody's phone and calls. Before he got on the train, he met up with a buddy of his that's still a policeman. And they got together at the bar, and he met an old captain that he knew, he had become a captain since he had left the force, and you know, was kind of a schmuck guy, played by Sam Neill. I can't remember the name of the actor that plays his old partner. Anyway, it's the same guy that played Ocean Master on Aquaman. But anyway, so that's his old partner. And he calls him and he says, hey, I can't explain everything to you, but my family's in danger. You need to go check on them. So yeah, now Liam Neeson's in the thick of it. So he's caught in this trap of having somewhat accepted. She's kind of gaslighting him. You know, he didn't actually make the choice. He could give the money away or whatever, but they want him to do this thing. And so she's kind of manipulating him, as well as not telling him all the stakes and things like that. And he doesn't really know what's happening. You know, so all he has to do is find this person who doesn't belong on the train. She tells him that they're getting off at a certain location down the line. And so he has to try to figure out, you know, who this person is, and put a GPS tracker on their bag or on their person or whatever. And once he does that, his job is over. And so, but again, eventually, as he tries to fool the system and deny things, they do threaten his family as well. So it's not just greed now to get this money. It's also they have his family. His wife has lost her wedding ring, so he knows that they've been in their house or whatever. And so now the stakes for him have amped up. It's not just about money. You know, just it continues to escalate. He tries to find ways to get out of it, and he thinks he knows who the person is. And I don't want to spoil everything, but, you know, he makes some wrong decisions, and it just keeps going where he has to figure out who the person is. And he realizes that it's not going to end well for this person. I'll spoil it a little bit in that, you know, he realizes that this person is a witness, and they're going to this certain train station to meet up with the FBI to come under witness protection or whatever, and, you know, uncover a murder that's happened. And as it continues, you know, he finds out it's closer to him than he thinks, and the reason he was chosen wasn't random, and those kinds of things. And it's kind of an interesting study in suspicion. He's suspicious of people and trying to figure out what their motives are. Who is on the train that's not normally on the train? Since he's been commuting for 10 years, he kind of knows the regulars. He has somewhat of a relationship with some of them in that he knows who they are. They have brief conversations. You know, he's suspicious of people that he doesn't know, and he's trying to figure out who they are and if they're this person that he's supposed to identify. And then later on, he realizes there's more people involved, and there could be other people on the train that are behind this or pretty much in the same boat he is, and that they're doing work for this lady or this organization that she belongs to. You know, because their family's threatened, or, you know, they are offered money, or whatever it is, they're in on it too. And so he doesn't know who's against him and who's. And so it's kind of a really good study in suspicion, like I said, but also people are suspicious of him. You know, there's a lot of signs, and, you know, if you see something, say something, you know, for the safety, for a terrorist act or whatever.
And he's acting very suspicious, you know, walking back and forth, asking people questions, doing things that seem strange. There's some good devices in there. Like, there's one car that the AC doesn't work, and so nobody's in that compartment, and so things happen in there. And, you know, any type of thriller like this, and since this one happens to be on a train, you know, I think of Alfred Hitchcock. I think of Strangers on a Train and that kind of thing. But any thriller harkens back to the early days of cinema, where you have your Alfred Hitchcocks and your other mystery thriller type directors and things like that. So, you know, it all builds on those same kind of tropes. And so I really like this movie. You know, it's kind of funny to watch Liam Neeson just take blow after blow. I mean, he gets beat on and he comes back for more, but he does show, you know, sometimes when he's getting hit, he's just like, you know, dumbfounded, like dead weight. And you can, you know, you think of not in any age, right? Somebody my age, almost 50, or even a young kid. I mean, taking the beatings that he does, you know, it's amazing that he's even standing. But we're kind of used to that, you know, with action movies. None of it is realistic in that somebody could take that much abuse and still be able to do anything. So, but I don't know, I guess just since, you know, a lot, even in the movie, they talk about his age and, you know, where he's at and whatever. So it's a really good movie. I liked it a lot. You know, it's not like, oh, that's the best movie of the year, but it's very entertaining, just like Nonstop was. I could talk about that at another point, but that's with him on an airplane. And, you know, the Taken movies, I liked the first one and elements of the other ones, but, you know, it kind of becomes ridiculous after a while when you stop and think about it. So sometimes you just have to not think about it with those types of movies. But I think with Commuter, it makes a certain amount of sense. It's not too far out there. But, yeah, it's a good movie. Very entertaining. So the next movie I'm going to talk about, my next train movie, is Unstoppable. And this is based on a true story. And it's basically there's a runaway train. And it's going down the line through it. You know, this is back east where I want to say St. Louis, but I'm probably wrong. You know, I've always lived in the Northwest or the West, and so, you know, I haven't been around a lot of commuter trains. You know, I know back east there's quite a few people that do commute by train every day, so I'm not around that or anything, but, I jumped the track. I jumped the track. Oh, there's more where that came from. So, yeah, I went back to talking about commuter, but anyway... Unstoppable, you know, this is where trains are used. You know, there's freight trains, passenger trains, all kinds of different types of trains that are used all the time back east. Where, of course, you know, I mean, I hear trains every night, you know, where I live. But it's just freight trains. It's not as frequent. It's not, you know, as much. I grew up around trains, too. I lived in a little town in Montana. When I say little, I mean there were no stoplights, no stores. There was a post office and a school in my town, and everybody from the area came to that school. But yeah, just, you know, there's like five or six streets in this town. And so it's a pretty small town, but it's closer to a bigger town, to Butte, Montana. But not too far from where I lived was another tinier town where... there was the train station. It was a big hub where all the trains were, and there was train tracks, you know, down the hill from where I lived. And so I was around trains growing up, and a lot of times, a lot of days and hours and whatever were spent with my friends down by the train tracks. You know, we'd go down there and play on the train tracks, and sometimes there were not abandoned train cars, but, you know, they were off on one track and just sitting there. So we'd climb around on the train cars. I'm sure it wasn't safe. I'm sure we could have gotten hurt. But we didn't. But we had a lot of fun climbing around the train cars and playing around down there. You know, there was a track where most of the trains came through on. And so we'd go down there and we'd have them honk their horn. And that was a lot of fun. And we'd put, you know, coins on the track and watch them get squished and different things like that. There was even a couple times when, I think it was only twice. But I remember one time in particular, the train, they were going fairly slow, you know. And they stopped or slowed down really and said, hey, come on, get on. So we climbed up on the engine and got in there with the conductor. We were going down the track and he was showing us things and talking to us and telling us about what his schedule was. And it was awesome. I had never been on a train before. You know, I was in the engine and it was pretty cool. I think that happened one other time that we just rode on the outside of the train. Then eventually the guy's like, oh yeah, I can't go too far. You guys live around here. I can't take you too far away from home. And so he had us get off the train and we did. And we thanked him and it was a good time. So yeah, I grew up around trains. We walked the train, you know, kind of like Stand By Me, you know, we walked down the train track and got off at different areas. And I mean, it was a lot of fun growing up around that. And, I had a cousin who, would visit. Well, he lived in the area at times and there was other times when he would just come visit, but he loved trains. I also had a little model train that my parents got for me, one of the big Lionel sets. And it was just kind of like in a figure eight and a circle. And I had different buttons to switch it, different cars and decouplers and things like that. So that was a lot of fun too. But anyway, this cousin loved trains and he always said, I want to be a train engineer. And I was like, yeah, right. You know, kind of thing. But he grew up and did lots of things. And now he works as a train engineer. That's what he does. He runs trains. Can't remember where he lives. That's terrible. Anyway, I'll have to look on Facebook again and find out where he lives. That, you know, I admire that. You know, somebody has something that they want to do with their lives, and they've, you know, he was determined to do that, and so he's a train engineer now. So I guess that's a lot of maybe some backstory there, but. Maybe that's why I kind of have a fondness for trains and these movies about trains. But anyway, so Unstoppable, right? That's what I was talking about. So Unstoppable, it stars Denzel Washington, Chris Pine, Rosario Dawson, so I've seen the movie twice. Once, Kelly and I watched it years ago. I don't know how many years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. And then we wanted our kids to see it, and so we rented it again to watch it with them. And the first time I watched it, I guess I had no idea who Rosario Dawson was. Now I know her from the Marvel Netflix shows, Daredevil and Iron Fist, and all the she was in all of them there for a while, and in Defenders. So I know her mostly from that, but. Since I knew her from that, I've seen her in all these movies. You know, like I didn't realize she was in the Kevin Smith movie, The Clerks 2, and the Pluto Nash movie she's in. And she's actually done quite a bit and been in several things. And so it's interesting how that works when you've seen movies, but you didn't realize, oh, this actress was in all these movies. Or actor, it could. So that I thought that was interesting and kind of fun. So Chris Pine plays this, he's new to the job. This is his first day as an engineer or a conductor. And they kind of explain the difference and what his role is. He's not the lead engineer. He's the conductor, I think. Again, I don't know all the jargon. But anyway, and he's paired up with Denzel Washington, who's the engineer. And, you know, it's the type of thing where, you know, he's the new guy coming on and the old guys that have been there for a long time don't really like him coming on to take their jobs. And, you know, so he gets a little crap
back at the train house. And then Denzel Washington finds out that he is being let go, that he's going to have to, I think, forced retirement kind of thing. And he doesn't take it out on Chris Pine's character. He's, you know, pretty level-headed as far as that's concerned. But Chris Pine's character is also related to the boss or something like that. He's married to the boss's daughter. I can't remember. Something like that. And so, you know, there's that little bit of thing going on. And he's going through a divorce. Yeah, so it must not be, he must be a nephew or somehow related to the boss. He's going through a divorce with his wife and things like that. So he's on the phone every once in a while with his lawyer trying to figure all that out. And so they start their day. They go out of the train yard. They have a, you know, they're hauling something somewhere, some freight somewhere. Somewhere else at the train yard, a different train yard, there's a train. The guy, the best friend or the cousin or whatever from My Name is Earl, I think is the name of the show. Anyway, him and another guy are out there. They're just kind of, you know, lower end paid guys at the train station. And they have to go switch a track or do something. I'll take a train out for just a little bit and get it on the right track in order for it to take off. And he's in the cabin by himself, and he has to go switch the gear, and he thinks he can make it if he gets out of the train and runs up ahead and switches it, he can get back on the train. But the train speeds up, you know, something takes over the wheel shifts or something pushes on the wheel or whatever, and it starts to speed up, and he can't get back on the train. And so we have a runaway train. I can't remember. Yeah, it's hooked up to cars and everything. And it's going down the track, and it's gaining speed. You know, eventually they find out it's gaining speed. And so they're doing everything they can to try to get it off, stop it, get it off the line, and it's just going crazy. And so Rosario Dawson's character is, she's kind of the main person in charge of the train station. And, you know, she has a big wall map of all the tracks and where all the trains are at, where all the switches are at with lighted panels and things like that. So she knows what's going on, and she finds out that there's this one runaway train. And so they're doing all kinds of things to try to stop it, but everything seems to fail. You know, they switch it, but it's going fast enough where it jumps the switch and keeps going straight. And so she's on the phone with people, and you kind of see her team, and then she's calling headquarters or up, you know, the freight line and all these kinds of things. And so, and she's fighting against pressure, not pressure, but she can't make all the decisions. She has to get approval or whatever from up ahead, but they're not listening to her. And the owners of the freight line think, oh, it's not that big a deal, but it, you know, she knows it is, and it just keeps going higher and higher, and they just keep failing. And so as this is going, you know, you also see Chris Pine and Denzel Washington on their route and learning about each other, talking about stuff and that kind of thing. And then they find out they're on the same track as this runaway train. And so they need to go as fast as they can to switch and get on a different track. And, you know, they almost get taken out by the runaway train. And then they decide they're going to go back. They decouple from their cars and decide that they're going to try to go catch up to it and get onto it and you know, find ways to slow it down. Because eventually this train's going to get to a city, and it's going to go around a hairpin turn, and it's going to go off the tracks and derail and kill people and destroy buildings and all this bad stuff. And so it's them against this runaway train. And, of course, you know, Rosario Dawson's talking to them, and she's trying to find other ways. And, you know, a lot of people are saying you can't do this and all this kind of stuff. And it's kind of exciting. It's kind of cool, especially if you like trains. And, you know, there's a lot of near misses and a lot of things that make it pretty interesting. And then eventually, you know, they're on the train. They're doing all kinds of different stuff to slow it down. yeah, it's pretty fun. It's a pretty interesting show. I liked it quite a bit. Well, I must have. I watched it twice. You know, it's not, again, this isn't like earth shattering, but it's what I like. I like movies like that, that they're interesting. They're fun to watch. It's interesting. You learn things. It's a true story. So you're like, wow, this really happened. I can't believe it. You know, it doesn't have to be the blockbuster. It doesn't have to be the art movie. It doesn't have to make you contemplate life. It can just be something that is entertaining and shows information. It's not frivolous, but it's just a good show. It's good to watch. It's compelling. There's the word I'm looking for. It was a compelling show. And of course, I like Denzel Washington, Chris Pine, and Rosario Dawson, and there's a few other actors in there that I recognized. Another train movie that we watched. I didn't see this one in theaters, but I definitely wanted to see it, and so got it on Netflix as soon as it was available. And that's Murder on the Orient Express. And it had an all-star cast of all kinds of people. But this is a Kenneth Branagh film, and I kind of like Kenneth Branagh. He's, you know, he definitely has a style, or, you know, he likes to tell the tale kind of thing. And, he, you know, he's made a lot of Shakespeare movies. He did the first Thor movie, which was good, I thought. But yeah, he's known for kind of these higher end films, one of those directors that likes to do more movies based on not artsy movies, but definitely prestigious. I don't know. Is that a pretentious word too? Anyway, here's this classic Agatha Christie tale being directed by Kenneth Branagh. And of course he's in it. He plays Hercule Poirot. if I'm saying that correctly. And my wife, she likes mysteries. She's read a lot of Agatha Christie books. Her mom read Agatha Christie books. And she likes, you know, Sherlock Holmes, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle as well. So she's read all the Sherlock Holmes, or most of them. And she grew up on Agatha Christie, among other things. And so, you know, it's to me, that right there is kind of an interesting thing. And then they throw a potpourri of famous actors into these roles. And, you know, because in an Agatha Christie mystery, you have several people and they're all suspects. And so it's an opportunity to throw an all-star cast at it and get a lot of great moments with that. And this murder, of course, happens on a train. And so they're all stuck on the train. They can't go anywhere. They can't escape. And so they're all on the train. And Hercule Poirot is able to spend time with each of them and ask them questions and find things out. And, you know, it's just that's the kind of a movie it is. And so it's pretty good. So the cast, when I talk in the morning, I'll have a list of all the cast that is in The Murder on the Orient Express. But right now I have to pick up my son.
So yeah, in the cast, we have Daisy Ridley as Miss Mary Debenham. Penelope Cruz is in there as Pilar Estravados. Josh Gad is there as Hector McQueen. Johnny Depp plays Edward Ratchet. That was before he fell from grace. Well, fell precipitously from grace. There's also Michelle Pfeiffer as Carolyn Hubbard. Always grateful to see her. You have Judi Dench in there as Princess Dragomira. William Dafoe as Gerhard Hardman. And I'm sure there's lots of other people in there that I should recognize or have seen in other things, but I don't. But yeah, then of course, like I said, you have Kenneth Branagh as Hercule Poirot himself. So lots of movie stars in there. But in my opinion, I don't think they overshadowed the movie by their presence. You know, I thought they all played their parts well and subtly. I didn't think there was any overacting. You know, it was a very dramatically shot movie. You know, it was kind of deliberate and the cinematography was really great. You know, when the when the train is stranded because of an avalanche. I mean, there's some great scenes there. I don't know if that was on a set or on location. It looked real to me. I mean, it looked really stark there with this train in the snow and the cliff and all that stuff and the tunnel up ahead. I think that really led to a good atmosphere for the movie. As the tension rises and Hercule Poirot questions people and finds things, and you know, just like a good Agatha Christie movie, you follow his clues and you really suspect it looks like it's this person, but then, oh, something else is found, and nope, they have an alibi, or something disproves what they thought before, and so then you go on to somebody else, and you know, I'm not going to ruin the ending to tell you who was the killer or who had a hand in it, but it was great. It was a great piece. I thought they handled the mystery very well. Like I said, I think it had a really good tone to it. It seemed classic and appropriate for such a classic book. But it was also interesting and filmed in a way that drove the tension, and it was very well done. I believe he's working on another Agatha Christie movie, The Death on the Nile, and I'm looking forward to that. I think it would be really cool to have a franchise, as we've talked about, of Agatha Christie, produced and directed by Kenneth Branagh. Actually, I don't know if he produced it or not, but he was definitely the director. So I'm looking forward to more of those movies. And it was fun to see all these different actors act against each other. So there's another movie that I've enjoyed. And I'm trying to be a little bit more critical in my reviews. But generally, you know, I talk about the movies that I like. You know, maybe the Outfield Excursions will explore more movies that I don't particularly like or have problems or things we can discuss along there. But for the most part, on these Strewn Along the Path Netflix Q episodes, I pretty much talk about what I liked about the movie. I might have complaints. I might have things that I didn't like or whatever. But generally, I like the movie. And generally, I do like movies. You know, there's some movies that I just can't stand and don't really want to spend a lot of time talking about them either. But anyway, those are the most recent train movies that I watched. We did watch, I don't know how long ago it was, The Great Train Robbery. And that's based on a book by Michael Crichton. You know, Michael Crichton's kind of known for these science thrillers like Jurassic Park and Sphere and The Andromeda Strain and things like that. But he also wrote a mystery or a heist book about the Great Train Robbery. And it's a really good book. And I actually haven't read that book. That's one of the Michael Crichton books that I haven't read. Well, I guess I haven't read some of his last works before he died, the last couple of books. And then there was a couple that came out posthumously. But I thought the movie was really good. It had Donald Sutherland and Sean Connery in it. You know, it came out in the late 70s, 78 or something like that. So, it, you know, it definitely has a different feel, an older tinge to it. But again, I like movies from that era. So, but yeah, it's a little bit slower than what we're used to. It's not as dramatically shot, but it's got all the pieces in there. It's got all the mechanics of it. And the other thing that's kind of neat about this movie is that it takes place in the Victorian era in England. So it's a different kind of train. It's a different era, different place. So it's kind of interesting in that respect as well. I think Michael Crichton even directed that one, because I know he directed his version of Westworld that came out. And that's another good one. I should probably... I need to do, like, you know, pick a director like Alfred Hitchcock or based on books of Michael Crichton category and go through some of those. But, I thought Michael Crichton's original Westworld was pretty good, too. I haven't seen the TV show, but anyway, there's another train movie that I've seen using Netflix, and I enjoyed that one as well. What other train movies are there? What train movies have you seen that you like? Is there something about that aesthetic or that setting that you enjoy about movies? Let me know what you think. Send me an email at journeyintopodcast@gmail.com or call the voicemail line at 77JN2107. I do have a Patreon. I'm not going to go too far into that, but there is a Patreon there if you want to look it out. It's at patreon.com/journeyinto. I'm glad to be back doing these Strewn Along the Path episodes, doing these, you know, just talking about movies that I've seen. It doesn't have to be Netflix. You know, I do watch movies elsewhere. But I always tell you, if it wasn't Netflix, I just, Netflix Q was kind of the catchphrase that I use. Maybe I should call it, I think I've said this before, sorry for repeating myself, but maybe I should call it the movie Q instead of the Netflix Q. But these ones were from Netflix, so I'm living up to the name in this episode. Well, that's enough for this time around, I guess. Stay tuned, and, you know, in a little bit longer, we'll find out what else is strewn along the path. Bye-bye now. Strewn Along the Path and other Journey Into Productions are produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. If you share or use this audio, tell people where it came from, and please don't sell it for money or alter the original content. I'd be much obliged.
Can't escape, and so they're all on the train, and Rook-a-roll Perot. Rook-a-roll. Oh, yes, sir. Mr. Perot is able to spend time with each of them and ask them questions. And I'm at work now, so I'm going to have to leave you once again. Hee hee. Have fun.